Hi, I'm Korra.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
So you're like the Avatar or something. Big deal.
Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
You're the master of all the elements. You should know how to drive.
And then she does.
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Food for thought.
I've never had a girlfriend to hang out with and talk to before. I'll destroy you.
I filmed the whole thing if you want to watch it.
The Avatar thanks you for your loyal service.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Britt.
Hello.
Sam.
Hi.
And Delaney.
Yo.
Today we'll be discussing The Ultimatum, episode 11 of book 3 of Legend of Korra, which came out today on Nick.com and other sites, including Amazon at 4 a.m. this morning.
Nick's, ridiculous.
Nick's great at actually premiering the episode on their website, which they aren't doing. Yeah, expect the finale next week to also be up on Amazon and Google Play before it is on Nick.com. But anyway, crazy episode to get to, no news, so let's just get right to it. The Ultimatum, written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Colin Heck, and his storyboarding team. And what were your general thoughts? What's your reaction? Let's start with Mel.
I liked the second half of the episode better than the first half. I wasn't a big fan of the Mako and Bolin stuff just because I'm not a big fan of the way they're writing Mako and Bolin, but I really liked the way the energy picked up as soon as Zaheer and everyone arrived at the Northern Air Temple, and that entire battle scene was just amazing. So, yeah.
What do you think of it in terms of the rest of the season?
I mean, it definitely pushed the plot forward a lot more than some of the other episodes has. Although I am surprised that Korra didn't end up at the Northern Air Temple by the end of the episode, because I thought that was going to happen. But, I mean, I think it was a faster-paced episode than a lot of the episodes we've seen before this.
Okay. Britt, what do you think?
I really liked this episode. Also great, the second half of the episode, once I got to the Air Temple, was a lot better than the first half. I felt like Mako and Bolin's scenes at the beginning were just kind of there, but they didn't serve really any purpose. They furthered the plot, but they didn't accomplish anything. Like, I feel like they're not... Sometimes Mako and Bolin aren't characters. They're just plot points. But I did enjoy the fight scenes, as always, and the animation was really pretty, and Jenora gives me feels.
Yes, yes. Jenora has returned after several episodes away. Sam, what do you think?
Less than 2.5 lines.
It was less than 2.5.
So what does Sam think about the episode?
It was an episode.
Yeah, it was an episode.
Did you like it? Were you excited?
I find that I don't like episodes as much when I rewatch them.
You liked it the first time, though?
I liked it the first time I watched it. The second time, not so much. I mean, it's a good, like, good episode, I guess. It's just not my cup of tea. It was a lot of action. It's okay.
Interesting. Okay, Delaney.
So, fair warning, I haven't rewatched it. I've seen it once, so this is just straight off hype Delaney. But, yeah, I didn't really like, I'll say the second half of the episode was definitely way better, because I was sitting there like, oh my god, I don't care, move on, Mako Bolin, I don't care, move. And, I really did enjoy it. The second half was awesome. And I really enjoyed it. The fight scenes were just fantastic, and I was on the edge of my seat the whole time.
I know it's hard to tell from one viewing, but you think it's one of the better episodes this season?
I guess thinking, what was it? The whatever episode. I'd say it's better than last week's.
Okay. Interesting.
Because there's only that one part in the set in the last week's episode that was really very interesting. And yay, death. No, I'm joking.
You're not.
No, I wasn't happy she died, but
okay,
yeah, the action in this episode was amazing. Like, I'm very pleased with how much action there was.
Yeah, I feel like we're not going to be representing the fandom's opinion here. I've seen a lot of, wow, this is the best episode of Korra ever. We have some of that in the feedback we got from you guys. The AV Club,
still episode 9.
The AV Club review is up and it got an A. Like, I don't know. I don't really see it. I understand why people are excited, but I'm going to jump on the somewhat negative train, although I think I probably disliked it more than all of you. Not a fan of this one. I actually liked it more upon rewatch. I watched it at like 4 a.m. when it went up on Amazon, and I was not super into it then. The script
is also 4 in the morning.
Yeah, so it may have been that the script was not strong.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed in Josh. The humor was there as expected of him, but not.
You must be the Avatar.
Yeah, like scenes like that, but it just a lot of really clunky
dialogue.
The only
funny thing I liked was the Asami and Korra thing.
That was hilarious.
That was great. That was the best.
I laughed so hard that's not come out my nose.
I didn't think we're on the level of Rebirth here in terms of humor, but it was fine.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of clunky, matter-of-fact dialogue that's put together. To me, a lot of plot points that don't really make sense. Like, I take issue with a lot of things that happened here. The biggest one being the ultimatum, just the physical thing that Zahira tells Mako and Bolin, I don't think really makes sense with the context of the season. And I guess I'll talk about that when we get to the episode, but
it was kind of a letdown when you think about it, because it was what's the ultimatum?
Yeah, I know we hyped it up, but at the same time, I just don't think it makes logical sense. And again, we'll talk about that. There's a way to justify it, but
I think it doesn't make sense logically why they did that, because they already had their bait. So
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So. The first two acts are somewhat mediocre. The third act is interesting. It's nowhere near on the level of the Stakeout's third act to me.
Oh, definitely.
Like, that was just so well written. This one is...
The fights are pretty.
So, like, I don't think the third act was well written at all, but I really think it gets there in the direction of the episode. Huge props to Colin Heck's direction team, Olga, Eugene, Natasha, and Will Ruzicka. Like, they just made this episode. Specifically, Rozika answered an ask on Tumblr. He says that Eugene Lee directed like most of the action in the third act. Huge props to him. I think he's Mr. Unagi on Tumblr. And just really makes the episode come together just from close to being a train wreck to me. I think the episode delivers visually. I agree, yes. Yeah. I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but it's really just not there for me, acts one and two. And Act 3, it also kind of isn't there for me, but it's good enough, I guess, going into the finale.
I think I enjoy there's a lot of weight to what we're watching. Not, like, the dialogue is, like, bleh, but, like, there's a lot of weight, and I just really enjoyed the darkness and heaviness of, like, what we're...
See, I didn't feel like there was a weight until we got away from Mako and Bolin.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking about, like, the latter half of the episode.
So,
like,
another general point to make. This is, like, the third time in a row one of several this season where we get to the third act, and that's when the action starts. And it was a good decision in previous episodes, like the Stakeout. It just works perfectly with the momentum of the episode. But I think it's a mistake here, because I feel like a lot of the big things that happen in the third act don't carry as much weight for me, because they just happen in 7 minutes. Just a ton of things, just completely rushed in.
Like, we didn't need Mako. We didn't need that really long Mako and Bolin stuff.
Like, you'd think Jinora's reaction to Kai falling would have a big impact on me, but it's like 5 seconds, so I don't really have time to process it.
You barely, it's like tears, she barely then... even gets to cry on scene, you know?
Kai, yeah. No.
And yeah, of course, it. As Delaney referred to before, I set the over-under on Jinora lines in the episode last night at 2.5, and it was 2, so it was the under. That's not a good sign, considering we go to the place where she's supposed to be, like, the main character.
And this, they actually give Kai more stuff than Jinora is an actual character.
This is arguably the conclusion of the Kai arc, which I don't think is a good, it's a good conclusion, but it is something. I like that Tenzin is given a larger role in the spotlight, and the big question after this episode is Tenzin alive? Which we will talk about, obviously.
Better be, is all
but
I'm going to say.
I think, actually, like, if he's not, this is actually a good conclusion to his arc. Like, this entire season has been done really well for Tenzin.
Yes.
But, yeah, so not a big fan. I think it's one of the worst episodes of the season. But that being said, that's not, like, a bad thing, because the season's been so good. So let's get into specifics. We start in Act 1. In Ba Sing Se, looting in the upper ring, Mako and Bolin take over the airship. Bolin's now, let's steal this airship, I guess, is the best line of that. And
yawn.
We just see Ba Sing Se in a lot of a lot of chaos and fire and looting, and Mel has a point about what is going on in Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, so I mean, I know we talked about before not really liking comparing this to this to dates in our world, but they did say this is kind of sort of 1920s for them. And there was, in the 1910s, really, there was two major revolutions going on. But the big one in Russia that, and why this is so similar to the Russian Revolution and not like the one that was going on in Prussia at this time, is that both Basingse and Russia kind of suffer from very heavy and very archaic class distinction. I mean, in Russia, the serfs weren't freed until the 19th century, and here you've still got the walls separating everyone in Basingse. And both featured a very incompetent ruler at what ends up being a turning point in history. And you've got both these rulers who are murdered personally by revolutionary groups run by the people who seek to destroy class status. For Zahir, it's a little bit different, though, because he doesn't want to set up a government of like equal opportunity and communism. He just wants chaos, which I suppose in a roundabout way does make everything sort of equal. But specifically here with the looting, there was major, major looting in Petrograd after Nicholas II abdicated and returned to Russia and was put under house arrest. He returned to his house. He was taken there by troops that had abandoned him and was led in there, and he found inside his palace people squatting. There were looters, and if you've seen the not quite historically accurate movie Anastasia, you can see in, you know, about 10 years after that event takes place, there's people still hawking off and selling these items, personal items that belong to the upper class, that they, you know, specifically say like, oh, I took this from the palace, or I got this from their mansion. So the reason I say that is specific to the Bolshevik Revolution and not to the other revolutions at that time is because that they specifically share a class distinction and economy situation. Economy not so much, but class distinction, which was not present. Like when the Kaiser was run out of Prussia, there was no looting, there was no tearing the town apart, there was no taking everything they possibly could from the wealthy. It just was the Kaiser was run out of Russia or run out of Prussia. So there's the difference, though, then comes in that there seems to be no power vacuum in Basingse. Because in Russia, there was a government that quickly took over to set up this sort of communism ideal of everyone's equal. Here in Basingse, it's exactly as it here once, it's chaos.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison. We received a lot of pushback last week after continuing to say the Zahir's maybe Marxist and similar, and the situation in Basingse is kind of like a communist revolution.
They're definitely following a trend. And of course, when you talk about the fall of governments, it's hard not to relate to what we've observed in our own history. And of course, they have to model it after something.
So I think really like the people's disconnect is us saying that Zahir like has like communist viewpoints, which we haven't seen, admittedly. It's similar in that the takedown of world leaders, that it is more anarchist. But I think the obvious comparison is in Basingse. This to me is just very clearly like Russia in the 20s.
Yes.
Like I agree with Mel. It's just it's completely a totalitarian communist revolution. And I think it's very clearly supposed to model that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I still think it is kind of avatared as communism, as I said last week, but in more in the practical sense than in the theoretical sense, in terms of communism. And I also don't think that will be.
And like I said, this loses the parallel once you get past the point of actual revolution. I mean, here you've got, again, it's just chaos and anarchy in Basingse, as opposed to the Duma and setting up a new government. It's not a revolution. It's a complete just abolishment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I would say it's okay that the disconnect, or I guess just where it starts to veer off, is just the Avatar world. We're having this direct spiritual element, because Zahir's definitely, like, he's mentioned it several times, and there isn't any economic.
Yeah, there's just no economic side to this.
Yeah, there are no economic.
Except for the rings of Basingse colliding.
Which is in itself, that goes to economics, though.
Yes,
I think that's the best we can say for that.
And that's why I say that. I mean class distinction more than anything else, not specifically poverty. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's and the looting of the upper ring is just very clearly.
The economics are heavily implied.
But are they
looting
the entire upper ring? Or
they're looting the palace.
Looting the palace.
We don't know. They might be looting. Well, I mean, we saw the lower ring go to the middle ring last week, and looting begin there. So
They seem to be looting the palace, though, because all we heard is the queen's gold's on the third floor, and then when they go to rush into the palace, they think the guard's going to stop him, and he's like,
yeah.
I'm going to join you. I know where she keeps all of her stuff.
I would assume it is an entire upper ring thing, but they'll focus on the palace.
Like, the guard doing that is also right out of what happened in Russia in the 1920s, yeah. as well, the 1910s as well.
Yeah. So I think the parallel's there. It doesn't seem like we'll see a conclusion to that this season. Kind of hard to imagine.
I hope we know, and I hope they draw it out.
I wonder if it'll be a plot point in book four, but we'll see, I guess. I mean,
make a Game of Thrones comparison.
We will save that for
It's for something that's already happened.
We'll save it for we'll see if we get back to it. But anyway, because this is a small part of this episode. We should focus on the other things like Mako's line or Bolin's line. This dialogue, I don't understand. Bolin says, you think just because you dated Asami, you know to fly this better than me.
They're just reminding us that he did.
And Mako says, yeah.
I guess the whole point the whole point of Mako this episode is Mako dated Asami, Mako dated Korra, haha, funny. Like that was it. Like that was the whole point.
I don't understand. I mean, there's more point to that. Like, I don't think the dating Asami is super relevant except in a joke.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that because like they make the same joke.
Yeah, they do make the same joke twice.
That's what I'm saying, which is why I think I think it's dumb.
I don't really understand this joke.
Yes, it was dumb.
I didn't think the entire scene was very funny.
You what, Britt?
I didn't. The only part of that entire dialogue point that I thought was funny was when he's like, "These people just don't know how to respect other people's stuff. Let's steal the
story." Yeah, I thought that was the highlight of the scene for sure.
It was
just kind of like what is personal property.
Anyway, so I think we get to the questionable part of. Just, I have a lot of problems structurally with this episode. That's my big thing. Like, and I'll bring them up as we go along. So here's one. It's focusing on Grandma Yin so much. And yes. We go bring the family out. Bolin says, he's learned that if you have your family with you, you always be at home. And Yin's like, nope. But then
I did enjoy
that
she just said nope. Like,
I do like that. Yeah.
They just thought we're not going to go with that. She's just going to be like, no.
Also, if you look in the background, like behind their door is like on fire. Like, yeah, you guys need to get out now.
Burn to death and like stay there, but like it's gonna just doesn't make any sense. To,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I don't know. She takes Yin takes the queen portrait. I'm interested to see why they do this. Like, what this is making Grandma Yin a queen supporter, and then continuing it now.
Well, I mean, that was another thing, and this happens a lot. You've got these factions that are staunchly, you know, behind the royalist ideals. I mean, the point of showing it, it might just be to
be funny.
Expand that. It could be funny. It could be just to expand the viewpoints. But
like the idea of since it is book three change that we're just going to change everything and like the whole like conflict of the role of the Avatar and then like do we need kings and queens anymore? So like the whole two sides issue. I think they're just trying to present every side because I feel like at some point it's going to lead to some giant hubbub maybe next season.
She is, you know, it's important also that she's an older person. An older person who's doing this as opposed to...
I do like that they're portraying
an older...
It shows
the generational gap, you know?
So there's that, and I also think it's good that they're showing an old person in Avatar who's not just super wise. Like, I like that she's being used as... Like,
humor,
more comedic
just
relief, yeah.
She reminds me of my mom.
She reminds me of my
Was your mom a staunch royalist?
Yes.
That's good.
Exactly.
Good for her. She has ideals.
Yes. It's very important.
Ooh, learn something new about Sam's mom today.
Yep.
I don't think she does.
She will.
I don't I just don't. I'm wondering what the purpose of this in the overall plot is, and I don't know if we have enough information yet to determine that. I think my favorite part of this episode is Malcolm Bolin's cousin, I believe. His name is, I just looked it up, but
his name is cousin.
It's like Sue or something.
He is cousin.
No, it's it's like three letters. I can't remember.
He's
anyway.
The
what?
Cousin.
Yeah,
cousin.
Son?
He's,
no.
He's,
it's something like that.
Beast
anyway,
Wait, that's Book of
he's Beast Boy. Yeah, he's
anyway.
Great.
Yes.
I just love all of his line reads in this episode. This character is really funny in episode three this season. And then we see him say, I mean, I probably could have handled it myself if you guys didn't show up. But thanks. Like, I didn't read that right. But that was a really funny read. And just later, I guess we'll get to him again. But then they go and track Korra's route. I take issue with them spending time on this.
Yeah, it took so
pointless.
Why are they so obsessed with the desert? Oh my god.
I think this makes the structure of what's happening make more sense. Like, you get a sense of how far away the desert is from Ba Sing Se. But, like, this is just not where we should be spending time right now.
There's so much stuff they want to do in this episode, and they decide they're going to spend, like, 4 minutes on the desert.
I don't really understand. Yeah, like, most of my problems with the episode are on a structural basis.
Yeah, it's
like,
all when they're,
it's, like, not necessarily Josh's script. Like, I do think the dialogue was bad, but I think it's more of when they're planning the episode, what they decide to include in it.
And the transitions were, it was just odd.
There was one good transition, and that was during the fighting, but anyway.
A very odd mix of things happening in this episode.
So, we get back to the cousin. He says, "Guys, it's the wreckage. I found it."
Good job. Like,
yes.
And he's, I think
Keanu
of
Reeves?
No, that's not Keanu Reeves. I think of this guy as like a Dragon Ball Z voice actor. I want to add "whoa" to the end of his line. Like, that would just fit really well. The actual comparison is the anime version of Strong Bad in the Homestar Runner emails. That's exactly what he sounds like.
Oh my god!
Whoa, guys! It's like that. That's what it's like.
That we were just discussing this last.
Yeah,
week.
But it's he's great. I don't know why he's reading these lines like that. It doesn't make any sense. Why? That's supposed
great.
To be said enthusiastically.
Just don't question it.
Anyway, then they land the airship almost on Zuko's dragon. So good job, guys.
Good. You almost killed the last
dragon.
Yeah, you
almost killed like, really? Or is it Druk? How do you say his name?
I don't remember.
He's a dragon named Dragon.
He's a dragon named Dragon. Okay, so we get to giant hodgepodge of humor scene in the Misty Palms Oasis. So I actually really like this part, which is Grandma Yin commenting on Bolin's reunion with Pabu. Ew, now he's kissing it.
That was hilarious.
Yeah,
was
and then they cut to Bolin kissing
Pabu. I like how Bolin, it like takes him a second to realize that they're there because
I didn't figure it out either because I was like,
I didn't
he
either.
Freaking out about Pabu. I was like, Pabu was with
him. And Pabu with, I don't know, it's just great.
They're
that
so cute.
They are.
Like me when I had a reunion with my dog after I went on vacation.
Did you kiss it?
Yes.
So then we get another cousin line. Guys, look out! Giant dog beast thing.
That was really funny.
That's mine.
I'm Keanu Reeves.
It's not Keanu Reeves. It's more enthusiastic than that.
Whoa!
His lines are just.
Why does Naga like Mako? Why?
Naga also did so a lot of Makora posts on Tumblr like, whoa, Naga likes Mako, but Naga also did this to Lin like his last episode.
Lin
so.
Did
Naga
have just likes though. People. Yeah, that's
Lin,
true.
Yeah, true.
Naga just likes people, I think.
Okay, Naga's then we get to the two. Finally, we've seen a lot of Makora shippers on Tumblr trying to find Makora in the season when there hasn't been any, but we actually do see a Makora scene now. They have a hug with, Korra and Asami there, and Mako and Bolin going out to greet them. So we have Mako enthusiastically hugging Korra, and then Bolin also just with a giant smile hugging Asami.
Adorable.
Britt, did this make your Masami heart go bad because she's getting cheated on?
My Masami heart is already sitting at the bottom of the ocean. There's nothing
next to the part of the ocean that Rose threw in at the end.
No, like I accepted.
Anyway,
hasn't gone into flames.
So if you want to like actually analyze this, like there's gonna be a lot of freaking out about it. But what actually happens is Mako's like just very happy to see Korra. And hugs her, and then realizes he's hugging her, and then gets awkward about it.
Because he's a dork.
Korra, on the other hand, does not just has a neutral face throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, she is. She's just like, yeah, exactly.
So, like, what you can conclude, Makora shippers, is that Mako very clearly still has feelings for Korra. That's what I would say, but not necessarily the other way around.
I have decided after seeing this hug that I want them to be friends, and not like.
Yes.
We're friends, but I secretly want to stick my tongue in your mouth, friends. Like,
Britt has many of those friends.
Yeah, apparently.
So,
no comment.
I just want to see their friendship come full circle, and them just to be like actual friends who can hug each other and not be awkward. You don't see that in television a lot, where they can come back from that. And I feel like they would
Ross
make
and Rachel
trip.
Eventually end up back together.
So Korra in the scene is not awkward about it.
I will say Mako might not, I mean, obviously Mako, like, probably still has feelings for her, but we could also say Mako is also just seems to be a really awkward person in general, so he just might feel awkward about it.
Yeah, I also
I mean,
think
it
does.
Just don't have a handle it thing.
No, I think he pretty clearly
it
conveys
felt like
feelings.
That hug at the end of Chamber of Secrets, and Ron and Hermione hugged, and then they realized they were hugging. They were like, or they were about to hug, and they didn't because yes. They're like, oh no, like we're not, we don't. That would be weird. It felt like,
even though she just like hugged.
Yeah, she hugged Harry. Crap out of Harry, and then she's like, oh, Ron, I'm just gonna firm hand it.
So here's what I would say about this scene. So this could very easily I like this reaction because it's like one person formerly from a relationship still having feelings and not being over it, and the other person just getting over it very fast. And so I feel like that's very realistic.
Well, yes,
it doesn't necessarily.
Considering Cora, like Cora's the one who like broke it off.
I don't even remember. It was kind of mutual, but.
Cora initiated it, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
so
initiated.
I just feel like this is a very realistic approach. I think in real life, this wouldn't mean they get back together. Like, this just happens between people who break up. But I think considering it is a television show with a four-season arc.
It's Mike and Brian.
I feel like I've always said that I think McCoy is likely to be endgame. But I think if nothing happened this season with that, then it would be... Then you have
I don't
to start
expect
to,
anything to happen.
Well, this, I mean, even any scenes like this, I mean, there was nothing. And you'd have to wonder if anything's going to happen. If nothing happened this season, but now this happened, and I'm pretty sure that's where we're going in book four.
I do have a feeling they're going to, I don't know, I could see, I think they might just make it just keep being awkward until Mako finally, like, becomes a person.
I mean, will that ever happen?
I mean, that is a good point. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway, I also have no Paul and just very happy to see Asami, which we mentioned.
He's just happy
I
to see everybody.
I love their friendship so much.
Yes,
it's like
they are adorable.
The
it's
happiest
pretty great,
moment
yeah.
of my life.
Really? That is...
Wow, that's...
okay.
Nope.
That's for okay. that one little scene?
Yeah,
all right.
That's... Okay,
yes.
we'll say... Okay.
The little things.
Yeah. Lynn says, good, you guys aren't dead.
Aren't
dead.
You guys aren't dead.
They don't understand that. But yeah. I like Mako's reaction to that. Don't get mushy on me or something. Yeah. Bolin, Mako meet Zuko. Bolin freaks out.
Bolin is such a fangirl.
He was honored to meet Zuko.
Honored, yeah.
It'll never end.
So then we get to awkwardness with Grandma Yin. Grandma Yin meets Avatar Asami.
Avatar Asami.
You must be the Avatar. You're prettier than I expected.
You're muscular. Like, okay.
Okay, so actually...
Cora just, like, isn't offended. She's like, thanks, you too.
Yeah, so Cora, I love how they write Cora this season.
You're talking about Asami's facial expressions? Like,
yeah,
her facial expressions are the best.
She was thinking, yeah, I could be the Avatar. I
no,
can
no,
do
no.
it.
But she was
Why am
very,
I not
She was very weirded out and didn't know how to react.
It was great.
So, yeah, Yin says, you're very muscular for a woman. And Cora says, thanks, you too. Like, I love that reaction from Cora. I think that just totally makes sense for her. It's like, she wouldn't be... a lot of Cora's reactions to things, like, societal... I've said this many times on the podcast before. A lot of Cora's reactions to, like, societal expectation things are just not going to be the same as us because she doesn't have the same preconceived notions because she was in a compound for her entire life, basically. So, like, she wouldn't see this as... She wouldn't, like, get offended by this comment.
No.
So I think it's great that she, like, takes it as a compliment because she probably just genuinely thinks it's a compliment.
It's as if she'd said, your hair is nice.
Yes.
Yes.
Or,
you have very shiny
like,
hair.
Of course I'm muscular. Like, just, yeah. Like, just a statement of fact.
And then, I don't know, I feel like an unnecessary line. What lovely young woman, Mako, why aren't you dating any nice girls like that?
Because they're dating each other.
Yeah, so, yes, sorry to break it to you, Grandma. That's what's happening.
I dated both of them and messed it up. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I enjoyed Asami's facial expression at that line.
Yeah.
I just watch Asami in every scene because her facial expressions are the
best.
Also
because she's just gorgeous, so how do you not? Like,
it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Anyway, Zaheer's... so then we get to the ultimatum part of this, and now we can discuss this. Mako and Bolin say Zaheer is going to wipe out the new Air Nation unless Cora turns herself over. So... Last
one most anticlimactic reveal.
We
ever.
Wildly speculated. I mean, our discussion did focus on this coming in the Northern Air Temple coming to play. But the problem we said, okay, it's just he's going to threaten the Airbenders. No, that doesn't make sense because he already had Mako and Bolin as bait. Why does he need new bait for Korra?
He needs better bait.
So
not good enough.
So there's logical inconsistencies here that are being put forward to advance the plot of the season. Which I take huge issue with because
which
this
I don't
is
even
a,
know if that advanced the plot. It just
well, it gets them to the Northern Air Temple
it took
as opposed
it on a
to staying in Ba Sing Se.
What if they did? It would have made more sense if they were like, I'm going to kill Tenzin unless, like, that would have made more sense.
Well, this
That's the thing, though, is I don't think Zaheer's intention, like, and I feel like if you had sat, she had sat down and looked at this logically, I don't think his intention was to take out the Air Nation just because of how, I mean, I guess she doesn't know how devoted he is to the some of the ideals top of the Air Nation, but he would not have done that.
So us, no, us
I
looking,
don't think he's going to kill Tenzin for that reason. He's the only Air Master alive.
Us looking at Zaheer in this episode, it's pretty obvious Zaheer just has no interest in killing these
Yeah, it's
people.
Just a bluff for Korra.
At which they speculate, but you can't take the chance, right? Which is why. So it just doesn't make any sense why he wouldn't just use Mako and Bolin as bait. Here's the only thing I can think of, and I've been thinking on this for since 4 a.m., but, I mean, I was sleeping for a portion of that, but, so, it's, the only thing is that there's no way for Zaheer to communicate to Korra that he has Mako and Bolin and is threatening them, unless he sends them and makes sure they find Korra and then he threatens someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's just no, no communication system.
I can think that could just be. Zaheer so this just seems would, pretty dramatic. So that could be.
He does seem dramatic.
I mean, yeah, but that's not like good enough, right? So
well, it's not. It was just.
So the problem, a lot of this, a giant portion of this episode is spent on communication, with the radio, and they said the word radio a thousand times.
They were so upset.
So
they need cell phones.
there's just no way for Zaheer to say to get a message to Korra. Practically, I have Mako and Bolin come to Ba Sing Se or else I'll kill them. But you would think that they could just come up with a reason. They could come up with a way for him to accomplish this. Like,
well, they heard it. Well, yeah, I guess they
just send a hawk with a note.
They could like.
Well,
send,
he doesn't know where she is.
Radio, apparently. They don't know where she is. So they could say he could put out a message on the radio with the reporter was talking about the revolution. Like you could come up with a way. So yeah. I don't like this excuse, but this is the best logical excuse I can think of for why Zaheer wouldn't just use Mako and Bolin.
The fact that they have to come up with excuses is just evidence that it was terrible to begin with.
It just,
he could have sent one of them to find Korra, tell
and
him
then
to
then
come
just keep
back
the other
to
one.
Us and
yeah,
say,
yeah, yeah.
Keep the other one.
That's a good idea. It's a good point.
That would have made perfect sense.
So another thing you could say is that
and
maybe.
And what if they didn't make it out of Ba Sing Se? Like, what if they didn't take the giant airship? Then
yeah,
what
he's putting
happened?
A lot
yeah,
of it, a yeah. lot of gamble on that.
A lot of you could say that he doesn't know. How close Korra is to these two, but I think he does.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, though. He said he wants this ultimatum, and I guess it makes sense for timing because he wants to show that you know he's serious about it. Though you know to Korra, even though it appeared that he was bluffing until Tenzin you know attacked, but he went there. He got there pretty quick. Like if they hadn't gotten the airship, Bolin and Mako would have been walking.
Exactly.
Like it would have been never would have like.
I mean, they would have just held. They would have just held them.
He would have just held them for as long
as
possible.
That's I think that was their plan.
Because eventually. She is going to show up.
Well, yeah.
And he knows that.
Yeah,
for
so,
whatever reason.
So this just too...
It's just odd.
It's just to advance the plot. I think it just is a big negative for the overall arc of the season because we have... This is a multi-episode arc, this ultimatum. It's not just a problem with this episode, although I do think you should take it out on this episode if you're looking for an episode to blame it on because it comes to fruition here. It's kind of like how I take out a lot of the overall problems with Avatar Last Airbender's overall arc on season 3 because it's when it doesn't happen there. It's kind of like the same thing here. But yeah, I don't think it makes logical sense and it's the first of many, I believe, in this episode that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So the general conclusion to make throughout all of this, we keep wondering about Zaheer's motivations. It's consistently just wants Korra. That's it. Like,
but what does he want Korra for?
Right.
That's
so,
the question.
We have really no idea.
So they've kept it a secret until the finale. But the big thing is, everything Zaheer has done, his primary motivation is getting Korra. It seemed like secondary, he wanted to take out the Earth Queen, but he doesn't even care about killing Tenzin.
And the president.
And
apparently
yeah.
we dropped that plot line.
I mean, he wanted to kidnap the president.
They talked about that not being important anymore.
So I think he wanted to kidnap the president to get Korra, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, like she'd risk anything to go get the president.
No, you can keep him.
We're like, oh, good, you have him?
Oh, by the way, something we were talking about how Zaheer knows stuff about Korra. How does Zaheer know that Korra's dealt with an incompetent president? I guess by reading the papers. That would be it. Yeah. It's just a lot
of just be general knowledge.
A lot of that doesn't make sense. Can't just no, I meant know
like,
things.
Well, no, listen. What I'm saying is that like
general knowledge from reading the papers.
No. He says specifically you've had to deal with an incompetent president. So
I mean, there's all those reporters and the guards apparently were really chatty. The White Lotus just are terrible. So I bet they were really chatty.
On what spin you're reading in the newspaper too, because they might be saying like, "Wow, the Avatar has to put up with so much, and it's not her fault, and the president's this, and the president's that." So, and considering who Zaheer is, he probably would have sided with the Avatar over the president anyway, because he doesn't believe in leaders.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thanks. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome. Sorry, we keep getting emails, so I keep having to add them to the
Stop outline. Checking your email.
I'm, gosh, Dylan. Gosh, they're podcast emails.
Well, you know what? I'm going to check my email if you're
checking. Wow. Like, someone wanted me to
I'm
check my Snapchat.
I'm showing you right
look
at me checking my
okay,
email.
Last
email from Papa John's.
Wow, great. Okay.
I didn't get one of those.
Act two, we spend about 30 seconds to a minute talking about radios. And they say the word radio at least 5 times.
It's ridiculous. Radio. Like, okay, we get it. You're
it's because it's an it's because it's a verb and a noun.
And so. That I actually liked. That was the other humorous scene. Was the one with Milo answered the phone.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good. That was great.
And then Cora's like, "This is your commanding officer." And then he hops too. Like, that's how you talk to little
Milo's
Milo.
Milo's done this before too, right? Like he answered the phone. Like Milo
six
just
in the morning.
Yeah, he was like, "Who is this?" Yes. Hang up.
Oh, look, it's a Snapchat from Mel. Wow.
Wow, you're on your phone, too.
It buzzed up. Excuse you.
Buzzed
up. So,
anyways.
So, I mean, I don't know when this
like,
actually happens, but I like Milo just being really enthusiastic about the baby bison. He's adorable. The blah, blah, blah radio, Tonrek says something. That's all I got from that scene.
Or, though, like, this is your commanding officer.
Oh, yeah, I guess that happens there.
Yeah, okay. It does.
I just didn't write it. Yeah, Cora knowing how to deal with Milo's great.
I really enjoyed that.
Now we're at Zafu, so we just go back to this
We've
place
done a lot
for
of traveling.
30
yeah, we've
seconds.
Done, yes, we have.
Sue laments that she should never have let Opal go, and then Lynn comforts her.
Adorbs.
Yes, I don't know.
We talk about how I'm so useless in this show. Like, I got captured by Mikasa right away.
You looked good in those airbending.
Yeah, I really did.
Thank you.
If you're unaware, Brit is Opal, so that's why she's saying hi. So, okay, I'm going to get to this again, but remind me. Opal's arc is very much wide open heading into the finale. That's one of the ones we should be tracking. So, yeah, Sue's arc isn't necessarily open. They could go somewhere with it, but Opal needs to have a resolution.
And they just left her at Zafu.
And
well,
just
well, I don't know, I guess.
And just nothing happens with Opal in the Northern Air Temple. Anyway.
Also, Toph? Question mark?
Nope.
Yes, please.
Nope. Nope.
I want Toph to show up and just beat everyone.
Sue readies the airship. Korra's into the spirit world. Everyone just randomly says their assignments. I'll do this.
Everyone had an assignment but Mako. Even the grandmother was taking a nap.
Exactly.
This is clunky dialogue. Just everyone just randomly saying what they're going to do.
I'll get fired.
Asami's going to protect Korra because girlfriends.
Yeah, that was the only important assignment after that. They all should shut up.
Yeah. Anyway, Korra goes into the spirit world. I'm not a fan of this scene.
She's a teapot.
Iroh says he's searching for a teapot and then meets Korra, so... Therefore, a teapot. Iroh says, in the spirit world, you always seem to find something you didn't know you were looking for.
Okay, are we all at least pleased, even though he's a plot device, that Iroh appeared?
Really, honest. I don't know. So here's the thing.
It could have been better.
They're just getting worse and worse at writing Iroh's wisdom. Like,
I agree.
In the spirit world, you always seem to find something you didn't know you were looking for. What does that even mean?
In the real world, you do that too.
Like, how does that relate to anything?
There is an ice cream store in New York that sells a $1,000 sundae that does the same thing.
Yeah, serendipity.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
It's got real
but...
gold in it.
Great. Yeah. So...
Exactly.
Iroh says, just because you're the Avatar, you don't have all the answers. Korra notably does not have guidance from her past lives, Delaney.
I will never recover. I'm just gonna...
Iroh says... Zuko, you should talk to my nephew. He and Aang grew to become best friends.
BFFs. No one knows. But, oh my god, we'll get to that.
First of all, I want to know if Iroh knows what's happening in, like, Korra talked about the new Air Nation, and Iroh just wasn't phased. Like, does Iroh know what's going on?
Yeah, that's one thing. Is like, can Iroh, like, watch? Is there, like, a little pool, and he can just watch? Peeks his head out of the portal.
Like, yeah, and then
what's doing?
What struck me, though, is that this scene was so completely useless. Like, she could have just, like, had an actual conversation with Zuko, or Zuko could have approached her and wanted to talk
about it. I don't know.
She could have, like, talked to Usami.
I'm fine with the scene, like, if it's, like, written interestingly, but it's not necessarily written bad, it's just not really interesting to me.
It wasn't necessary.
It didn't accomplish what it
could. I liked when she was a small child and ran into Iroh the first time.
Like, yes. That was adorable. Like, that worked really well.
But back in the day. And then Iroh says, I'm glad, I came looking for something else, but I'm glad I found you. So no. That's trying to tie the scene together.
I love how they decide Zuko is the beacon of wisdom.
That was very on the nose.
It is very on the nose. I'm not a fan of that dialogue. I'm not a fan of Iroh using Iroh like that. Moving on. So then we talk to Zuko, and we get another scene where I'm not a fan of using Zuko, not a fan of the scene, I'm not a fan of using Zuko like that. So it's like back-to-back here, talking to people from the old series, and I don't think it really works. Zuko says...
And it could have worked. Like, you could have done something like that, and it'd been really interesting to tie, like, the two timelines together.
You could have used this
as a moment to reveal who the mother of Zuko's children were.
Yes, exactly. I need to protect my daughter and my wife.
Just what her name is.
Honora.
Her name is Honora.
So Zuko does not name his daughter. He just says daughter going to the Northern Air Temple. Also, Zuko's wife is Suki, obviously.
Continuing on.
She had three kids with him. I'm pretty sure she knows him pretty well.
Like, Zuko, yeah, no.
We even
as you will see on Tumblr, my post.
Okay. I was often Aang's counsel, and I'd love to be yours, says Zuko.
Zukang is actually
Zukang. Yeah. Zuko says Aang liked airbenders, but also all people.
Wow.
Congratulations,
like,
Zuko.
I actually felt like that was so kind of insightful that he cared about the airbenders, but he cared about everyone else too. Like,
he didn't give her any real info. He's like, well, Aang would have wanted
Aang
to protect the airbenders,
that.
But
Aang
he
was
also
alive,
would have wanted to. Aang would have, you know, protected the airbenders, but he also would have wanted to, you know, protect the entire world.
It's
so,
just the most general advice.
Yeah, it could have been
literally
less general.
That was literally the end of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Anybody.
Good job, Zuko.
He's like, Aang would have done this, but he also might have done this. So you do you.
You do you, bro. It was helpful.
Like, if they could cut the Iroh scene and just had her talk to Zuko and then have an actual conversation with specifics, it would have been a lot better.
And then Korra at the end says, it was helpful talking to you. She says abruptly, after, like, 30 seconds of talking to Zuko.
Zuko was awfully cheerful, and it's a bit hard to, like, deal with. I'm sorry. Like, he's always smiling, or he just looks happy, and I'm like, I'm happy for you, Zuko, but yes. I don't get it. Like, cheerful Zuko is just hard to deal with.
But then at the end,
it's like when Mako smiles, you're just like, what are you doing?
That's
like,
not
who
you.
Are you? Are you even the same person?
But then at the end, he is bewildered that Korra spoke to his uncle.
That facial expression was also great.
That was a good facial expression.
So, like, I don't have any emotional reaction to Zuko being there.
I don't either. He's just there.
I don't know what it is about it that's not working, but I don't think it's...
Can we get rid of Zuko and have Toph, please?
I don't think it's the fact that it's
Zuko.
I like Zuko, but
I don't think it's the fact
Toph.
That it's Zuko as opposed to anyone else. I just don't think they're, like, giving him anything interesting to do.
They are, it's true.
I think he's become like Mako and Bolin. They just don't know what to do with them, so they don't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll almost certainly be in book four, but yeah.
But it's like, I hope they do something.
Like, he could have had an emotional reaction to Iroh, but instead he just makes a face and then we cut away. I don't know. Like, I feel like if you want to use these old characters to give inherent sympathy in the show, that's fine, but they're not actually doing that. They're just putting them there and then having them do,
they're
like,
even,
random things.
They're plot devices, and they're not even well-used or good plot devices.
Oh, no, the Milo thing was at the end of Act 2, not at the beginning. So, but we already talked about it anyway. Korra orders Milo to get Tenzin. And then Tenzin says, it's too late. He's here. And then I say,
he's here.
Like, I thought that was a really good scene. Like, it was very dramatic, and I felt very, like...
It was interesting how they boarded that with Tenzin not actually being in the shot until the very end.
Yeah, and he was, like, it was, like, looking through the door. Like, I liked that a lot. That was well done, that little snippet. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was Act 2. interesting, certainly an interesting act two, but not necessarily great. Anyway, act three, where all the action stuff happens. All of this does happen in act three in this final 7 minutes, so. We start off with Tenzin and Milo running, then flying. More majestic shots of Gazan. What am I talking about here?
He was being majestic.
Well, he's just standing there and they like pan over him, right?
You wrote it, not me.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to think of the specific shot.
Gazan's just in general
like,
majestic.
I feel like they have a shot here that's similar.
Like a unicorn.
That's similar to the one in last episode where they show him like on top of the wall while everyone runs around and they just pan around him.
He's just so majestic.
Yes, anyway. Kai says something. I don't even care what. And then Kyle's. This just all happens very fast.
Like they've decided Jinora doesn't speak, but Kai gets.
Kai
to
talk. Gets to speak, but not
like,
Jinora.
Why?
Kai is meditating with Opal and other people. I thought this was all women at first, but I think there's a dude there. Not sure though.
I wasn't even
who
thinking.
Cares?
The guy with the no hair is around.
Yes.
He's not in that meditation circle.
No,
I don't
he's
think.
Not. He's sparring or something.
By the way, it's notable how close Kai and Opal seem to be. That's really interesting.
Maybe they're BFFs.
I know, they just met and then they're like already BFFs.
Besties.
They're BFFs.
They're BFFs?
They're BFFs.
Anyway, then Minghua comes in, threatens Opal in just a terrifying shot.
That was really terrifying.
Just a giant...
Well, it took me a minute to figure out who it was.
It was, she looks
and
different.
And I was like, oh no.
A giant icicle sticking to
goodness.
Her head. It's very...
Minghua is the most hardcore. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Minghua is certainly the most violent,
very punk rock.
Violent
she's
and
very punk rock.
She's not necessarily the most dangerous of them, but she's the willing to go the furthest. It seems like
yes,
she's the Bellatrix Lestrange.
She is. I agree. Hold
except she's like more sane, but yeah.
She is more sane, but she hasn't spent like 12 years in Azkaban. Well, she was.
She did. She has done
she's
that. Exactly.
13 years in Azkaban.
13 years. Yeah. Look, there's Jinora running out with the family, but she doesn't say anything.
Okay.
Those are my comments
on that
scene.
Over Jinora
no dialogue, though. Good, the entire family is here, says Zaheer. That was pretty creepy.
That was pretty creepy. I had like an
Here's
incredible
the whole
flashback. Like, I had an Incredibles flashback. Like, that's what that scene made me like.
Yeah. That's
very...
true. They compare the Tenzin family to the Incredibles, yeah.
Yeah, it was very instructive.
Sure. So then they round everyone up. Kaya is next to Opal. Jinora's hands are on Kai's back.
Yeah, those two seem to be best buddies.
Yeah, pretty close, huh? Yeah, if you look closely, it's pretty clearly like she's clinging to Kai. Not like clinging, but just like on
it's
him.
Well,
Kaya knew her grandmother.
That's
so.
True.
I mean, Jinora and Kai, but Kai and Opal are also next to each other. They are clinging to each other, though.
Yeah.
They're closer than Jinora and Kai are, but. Yes, hashtag Kainora, hashtag Jinkai. So here's a pretty like a pretty important line that's thrown in. Zira says, "It's a pleasure to finally meet a true airbending master." I think this is notable when we're going to discuss if Tenzin's alive. He says, "I want Korin. I'm tired of chasing her. You're using us as leverage," says Tenzin.
Like again,
he's just like, Tenzin. Yes.
So
like, obviously.
Remember that time in book one.
This is just one of your points to gain more power.
That's exactly. Tenzin is incredible.
Zaheer,
pointing.
I love
Tenzin.
Tenzin's incredible at pointing out obvious things.
Like Tenzin's a better detective
sneaky,
than Mako.
But I know what you're up to.
This is
like,
an awful line. This is, why
know.
Would you? This
it's
is not
so
something someone would say.
But it's
also,
Tenzin.
I don't think leverage
Tenzin
is
does.
The best word to use.
You're using us as leverage. Yes.
Who actually says leverage though?
Excuse me. Half pin barrel hinges. Pirates of the Caribbean. It's more like bait than
yeah,
leverage.
So that line's,
like,
I don't
know. Actually says leverage. Like, no one actually is talking, it says that word.
Just for a second, we reverted to book one Tenzin's writing.
Yeah.
Like, where he said just ridiculous things. Anyway, I'll never let you get
oh,
to...
Oh, really, Tenzin?
Yeah, oh, really, Tenzin. That was my Tumblr post. I'll never let you get to Korra, says
nice.
Tenzin. Unfortunately,
that was
you don't have a choice. Yes, I do. So, a lot of...
And then, boom.
I think,
like just...
I think we spent a lot of time... I don't know if we did this on the podcast or just on Tumblr. A lot of time talking about who could take who in the Red Lotus Gang one-on-one. And the answer is Tenzin could take them one-on-one. At least here.
Yes.
So he just
definitely
like
Zaheer. He was pounding Zaheer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have identified Zaheer as the weakest of the four, and I think that's true.
Zaheer seems to know it too, considering he was doing nothing but running away from Tenzin.
Yeah.
He has had bending the least amount of time.
Yeah, we'll discuss this when we go. Okay, so we get to all the fights. Not yet, but Bumi, Kaya, Tenzin stay and fight. Everyone else leaves while trying to avoid Pulley. So my question is, why just left her?
Who's driving the airship
while Pulley is shooting? I didn't even think
about that.
Yeah, so it's circling. The airship is circling, but Pulley is standing not out there shooting. So who's driving?
Who is that?
What we're going to find out.
I don't think anyone's driving.
That's the big secret. They want Korra to drive the airship.
Yeah, that's what they want Korra for. Oh, we figured it out.
Korra, we need you to be our designated driver.
Yeah. We need a DD.
So this is another example of the second time in the season where we have just a really smart action sequence. And what I mean by that is they kind of like set up a video game level. Like,
it was really cool. Like, I thought it was very nice.
It's like we have to escape while avoiding the person who's shooting giant combustion things from the sky. It's very similar to the, not in like content, but in like premise to the Terror Within fight scene, which is episode 8, I believe, with the beginning of that, where it's like, okay, they're stranded in a thing surrounded by lava. We have to like go above, or we are well avoiding Pulley. Again, Pulley just makes the fight scenes very strategic because she's just like a presence there constantly. And I really prefer these type of action sequences to just random fighting, like ones where you have to like think about what's going on and like the characters kind of have to think. I don't like the execution, but I do like the setup here.
Yes.
So then we get to the individual fight scenes that are the one-on-ones. We have Tenzin and Zaheer, who are basically even while we see them. Maybe Tenzin up or something. I don't know.
I really enjoyed the more combative airbending.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, it was the first time, I think it was the first time in Avatar we've had two airbenders, like, fight each other, like, hardcore. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of hard, you know, in the first series.
a little bit. I mean,
just the second one, though, still nobody.
Well, it's interesting to see how airbending would be used against airbending. Yes. Because obviously there's watching airbending being used against fire or earth, you know, is one thing. But here, watching the same maneuvers being used against the same maneuvers was really, really cool to watch, actually. Yeah, I think watching airbenders fight was one of the coolest things we've seen so far.
Because Aang would go on the offensive, but in general, he would use his other elements when going on the offensive. And it's really, because Tenzin was definitely, you know, he was pushing at Zaheer a lot. And I really enjoyed that. We saw a lot more offense with airbending. I really enjoyed that.
Offensive
I liked
airbending.
All the hopping around they did. They were like little monkeys.
They were parkour in it through the temple.
Anyways,
they were.
Yeah. So we have that.
It suddenly became Assassin's Creed.
We come back to that one, but then we get to Kaya and Minghua. This is my favorite scene of the episode.
It was
they've really nailed the Kaya fight scenes.
Yes,
this season. It was like Azula and Katara
again. Both Kaya fight scenes are done by Colin Hecht's team. I don't think this one was storyboarded by Will Ruzicka like the last one was. I think this was Eugene Lee. But Minghua has these ice tipped water tentacles, which are just, I love this concept, and she's like spinning them around. And then Kaya breaks the ice off one of them and like kind of like fires it back, and it looks really cool.
Yes, this is one of my favorite.
Like, I freaked out so bad because I was like, "Don't kill Kaya!" And then she just flips it around. I'm like, yeah. "Yes!"
And then just Kaya, and then Minghua charges at Kaya, and then Kaya randomly knocks her off. So I had a problem with this the first time I watched it, but thinking about it, Minghua charging at Kaya is kind of like an aggressive move that's leaving her defenseless.
Scary. Yeah.
So it's scary, but then it leaves her open to just be like knocked off the edge. But then. Mm-hmm. We get a logically questionable thing that happens in Minghua just coming back.
She doesn't have 100 arms, Dylan.
Floating. She either has 6 or 8. I think
she has 6.
It's the octopus.
It seems like she has 8 at some point.
I think she had 3.
At some point, she definitely does have 3 on each side. It's possible at another point she has 4.
Which would make
it
a squid, not an octopus.
Yeah, so anyway, the questionable thing is here is how is she...
We know in Avatar they have the squidipus, like we don't know.
The squidipus, that's a good point. It alternates between 6 and 8 arms. How is she floating back onto the air temple? She's not actually attached to anything.
She bended the water.
Yeah, but you can't fly momentum. With water.
You can't direct force, Dylan. You could even, like, enhance force.
Yeah, but she's just, like, floating up. She's not, like...
No, she's clinging to the rock side with the tentacles.
No, it kind of looks like that, but she's not actually doing that at the end. She's just floating. I looked at that.
No, she's not just floating.
No, I'm telling you, she's just floating. She's not clinging. She's not clinging to them with the water.
I would agree with Dylan, but I will say I've only watched the episode.
Seen it three times. I got you. It that would make sense if she like grabs with the water arms and then pulls herself back up, but she doesn't. The water just kind of dissipates.
I also was struck by how odd it looked. I was just more impressed because I was like, oh god.
Like, I'm willing to overlook this because then her like octopus form is just used really well. Mm-hmm. In the rest of the fight scene. So she floats back, and then they show her like fighting, and then we just move to the next scene. This was the good transition I talked about earlier.
Yes, that was a good transition.
We go to Bumi and Gazan fighting. This is like the biggest mismatch. I've identified Gazan as probably the best bender, most powerful bender we've seen in this series or last series. I think that's debatable, but I don't understand who can beat him one on one in a fight. Certainly not Bumi. Who's just running away.
Bumi just got the short end.
It actually makes a lot of sense strategic wise to tell Bumi to fight the best guy because he can just run away and distract them while the other two have a better chance.
Yes.
But Bumi like bites him, but then eventually Gazan.
I did like seeing Gazan earthbend without lava.
Yeah, that's not yet, I don't think. But he does to knock him off him. Yeah, he just does the rock up. I see her having as much fun as I am, Bumi says to Kaya, in a very stereotypical action line, which is no actual meaning.
They're having fun. It's sibling bonding time.
Yeah, exactly.
This is just like an action movie line, and it's just bad. Anyway, so here's... Okay.
Well, it was like Sokka and Katara when he was like, how you doing? She's like, well... When they were fighting Mei and Ty Lee.
Yeah. Well, that's like funny, though. This is just like... not having fun, eh? That's just what this is. It's not like, it's just like...
Nice voice.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. I take serious issue with this scene.
Self-sacrifice.
So this is just random. The Kai decides to fly to the airship to avoid, so they can get away and distract, Pili in the air.
Yeah.
And I just don't think there's any setup here.
There isn't any setup. I mean, they can't fly unless somebody distracts her. Like, they make some sort of diversion. But it could have been better. I did like visually when he, like, smacks the air in her face. Because from what we've seen from the combustion, if they don't have a clear line of sight, they're kind of useless. Like, they're either all or nothing.
It's, like, not a bad idea, I guess.
I feel like that just sums up the episode. Like, everything visual is just great. But a lot of it's not tied together or makes sense.
So why is Kai going to...
Because it looks nice for the children.
It doesn't make sense that Kai would do this completely self-sacrificing thing based on his arc.
For Jinora, he might.
Or for Jinora, he would.
Or it could be... I mean that seriously. If you do look at it that way, I feel like the only way you could justify it is if he was doing it...
Like, I think he would protect her, but I don't know if it's been set up that he would just, like, sacrifice his life, which is what he's
doing.
We saw him sacrifice himself for the other airbenders when he was in the Ba Sing Se in the catacombs.
He's being nice, airbending school.
So I think that I think at least shows is that there's a willingness there to put
We could also say
himself.
That Kai
And that's
also...
what that really is in is... Not so much self-sacrifice. I think it's just putting others before yourself.
Well, I was going to say that he might not have necessarily really thought of as sacrificing himself as this is something he had to do. Because we do have to remember, like, obviously, you know, if you're 11, you understand the permanence of it. But he might not have thought, like, I could die. Like, he was just kind of doing it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because that's what I would think. Like,
His tone kind of made it seem like he was.
But yeah, I think that earlier I said that this like concludes the Kai arc, and I say that because the Kai arc begins. I don't think that sounds like a word. The Kai arc begins with him being this like thief as a kid, and just being like a not great person, and this is like his redemption. So from here on out, Kai could just be relegated to a background character. Like, we've seen the conclusion of everything that we've seen from Kai so far.
Like, he served his purpose.
He doesn't need to do anything else. He could still stay as a major secondary character, but now he could also just move to the background.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be nice, so Jinora could say more than two things.
Yes, or they could say things to each other and be adorable.
I will say, I actually did, the first time I was watching this, think they were going to kill off Kai. I didn't think that's what they were going to do, because we saw the shot in the trailer. It's like, yeah, obviously someone's going to go get him. But I did actually start to consider, okay, maybe it would make sense if this is the conclusion to his arc and he redeems himself by dying. And then this also relates to Jenora's coming of age as like a love and loss type
and
thing.
And it just relates to how weird the season is, how we're expecting any moment people to just die.
Yes, that too. But it's also like the love and loss, like similar to My Girl. It's just a very similar like coming
okay.
of age.
You and would.
Compare it to My Girl. Yeah, I know I would. And it's just, it would make a lot of sense, but then he didn't die. I thought he actually was going to when I watched it, though.
Or at least it would be left open-ended where you see him fall and you don't see him ever again. Like,
he's out with Toph, and he's...
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he flies to the airship.
They're having adventures together, like Batman and Robin.
He puts up his air shield. Jenora says kind of in a heartbreaking shot. I expected me to have more of a reaction to this. Not really, though.
Well, was it back in the Flying Bison episode when they like had Jenora and he freaked out and was gonna, I can't remember. Was that the one where he freaked out at some guard or something because they had Jenora in a cage and he like really freaked out about it? Like that's where I could see justification in him flying off to distract Pali if it was for Jenora's
I don't know if they really did that though. Like, I
and this is coming from someone who really doesn't care about that shit.
He like should have not acceptable. You have to care. He said if he like said Jenora, I need to protect Jenora or something like that before flying off. You know, like
he might have been thinking it.
Yeah, but like we just don't really have a setup. That's my thing.
I may be alone, but I just felt like this was very like made sense with his character's personality and what we've seen for him so far. For him to make this leap, you know, he's very reckless, but he does care about people.
I would agree with that. My thing is, I don't know. The episode's just so smashed together, and because if the rest of the episode wasn't this way, I could accept it more. But it just one like odd misplaced thing after another.
I certainly think this concludes. This makes sense with this character arc.
Like they might have had to cut a bunch of the episode because they just wrote it too long.
Or we couldn't. We don't have to spend 3 minutes with Grandma Yin, so then we can can actually get to more stuff.
7 minutes on the airship looking for the wreckage.
Oh, so annoying. Yeah, at least when they played Pie Show for 2 minutes, I felt like something was accomplished.
2.5 minutes, yes. And that was just a very well put together scene, and we weren't distracting from anything else.
I don't know if anyone else like felt this way, or if it was just more of like, I guess it worked, but I was really expecting Jenora to like fly off or something. Like I was really disappointed. Yeah,
so
I was really disappointed.
Here's the general point. I was talking to
like every time they introduce a boy character, they're like, oh, now we have to lessen his love interest. Like, thanks, Kay.
I was talking to Greg at G Safarin on Twitter about this. Jenora's like this airbending master, and she's not given anything to do. She doesn't like fight at all in the episode. You think she'd be a very good force to have here?
Even addresses her like he's like Jenora. Like he says that when he's
and
going,
then she runs and doesn't have any lines. Then, yeah.
I was really disappointed. I was expecting some Jenora awesomeness, and we got two lines.
I mean, if you want to argue the other side, it's like Jenora doesn't know combative airbending or whatever, but and she's not necessarily like known to like just randomly start fighting people. But I'm not happy.
I mean, out of everyone, she'd be the one out of all the children to understand the gravity of the situation.
Yeah. It would have been more interesting if her and Kai had, like, or she had run off to, like,
if Jenora had done
and
it,
Kai
yeah.
goes, like, up behind her, but he's the one that falls, and then she has to, like, go away with the family.
Well, I would have been so much more interesting if it had just been Jenora. If Jenora had done it.
Just Jenora.
Yes, just
that's
Jenora.
The next series. Anyway,
yes, book four, Jenora.
Please, yes,
just Jenora and Avatar Asami.
Book four, Avatar
Asami.
Oh my god!
Avatar, yes, please.
The best two characters. Okay,
yes.
So then we go back to Gazan. He knocks them, Fumi and Kai, off the cliff with normal earthbending. Again, showing he doesn't need the lava bend.
I love how we're just Sparta kicking everyone off terraces.
I'm kind of done with people grabbing onto to ledges.
And I'm actually kind of done with people falling through trees. Like, I'm fed
that
up.
That too.
That.
Trees aren't always going to protect you fall.
Especially if the tree impales you on the way down.
Can we talk about how many times this has happened to Boomy this season alone?
That's true.
Like,
it also happened in the first scene of the season.
And I wanted to
think
how if you were caught in a tree like that after falling that far, your foot would have been dislocated to all ends and like ripped off and you'd have broken the branches.
Bree's here to yell at you for being stupid.
He would not
be able
to move. Like, I'm pretty sure he would have, like, his foot would have just slipped through if the branches did not break. He would have just slipped through and his foot would have been like a mashed pile of bones and like flesh.
Yes. Wow, what a pleasant image.
I mean, that's what would happen if you fell from that far. Like, you fell like a good 150 feet.
I agree.
They strangled the Earth Queen on screen. We're there. This image doesn't bother me.
Yeah. So Kaya says they have to let go. They fall into the cliff. They say the word die, as we'll talk about in a email.
They say it twice.
But
you have to let go or...
We'll talk about the die thing later. So then to the big scene of the episode. Tenzin's cornered by all four of them, Philly being in the airship. He says, as long as I'm breathing, it's not over.
That to Zaheer.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, I freaked out.
This is what I told Allie about that, because she said that was her first thought too, is I feel like in a world where Zaheer would be willing and wanting to kill Tenzin, that technique would not be as effective on a fellow airbender who might be able to counter it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, there's that. But it didn't happen. So...
Logically airbend air out of lungs. Like, here that just go. Doesn't work with the areola and how they, like, physiologically function. Like, you would have to rip the lungs open. Like, you'd have to rip out the little areolae, like, the microscopic sacs in her lungs.
Well, Dylan, really now we know how she died.
That would be really bloody. Not to mention, like, there's a crossover and they basically become part of the bloodstream right then and there. And there's, like, a really complex filtering system, and it just would not work. Like, you could take it out of her bronchial tubes, but there wouldn't be that much air. And also, it would be really bloody. And there was no blood. And, like, what if her...
Enough. Too much bad imagery. On Tumblr, Eugene Lee, who we said storyboarded, he apparently did just storyboard the entire action sequences throughout all this. He says Olga... Ulanov helped, so who is, I think, the assistant director helped him a lot on that. So huge props to those two and Colin Heck and the entire direction team for the act three of this episode. Yes. It's kind of astounding that they gave one storyboarder the entire action sequences in act three. That's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So this line seems very intentional. As long as I'm breathing, it's not over. What they are using it for, who knows?
Well, he looks like Hercules at the end of Hercules when he gets beat up by the Cyclops and he has those black eyes.
Oh,
he looks
I think it's a good point.
He's gonna like swim through the pool of death.
He's gonna go get Korra's soul from Styx.
I think it's a good point
like at this moment in the next episode, Korra's gonna show up out of the sky and unleash hell on.
Well, okay, so I assume we've all seen the Hunger Games.
Yes.
Spoilers.
So I made that post as a joke, but it is actually interesting because if you think about it, though, it's a similar, you know, situation where they're beating the crap out of the person that Korra, you know, I wouldn't say maybe cares about the most, but really, really, really cares about. And it's really emotional.
And can we talk about, that's not a scene that we've had, like, this, we've never had a scene like this before, where it's,
yeah, it was
like,
very, very dark. They're beating him repeatedly.
So it happens kind of in the background as we're panning to, like, a wall, but it's kind of interesting
how
they set that
up. That actually
made
it worse, honestly, that they pan, like, I was like, oh god.
Well, because the assumption there is that the imagination is worse than whatever's happening, B, oh, whatever they're showing, they can't show because it's that. So
they're just repeatedly pummeling him, and then we cut away. He does make a louder sound.
Yeah, he does.
But he made one before it, so I don't think it's like very clearly a death sound or whatever.
Internal bleeding.
Check.
First organ.
Check. So here's my thing. It doesn't really make sense that Zaheer would want to kill Tenzin.
No. Or what really would it accomplish?
Well, just unless whatever he needs Korra for is more important than...
It doesn't even matter, though.
You could make the argument you've got Jinora, who is an heir. Not that Zaheer knows that she's You know, it's entirely possible what he wants Korra for is more important to him than keeping an airbending master around.
But if Tenzin is dead when Korra arrives, that ruins everything. Because
he could be saying,
assuming she can still have the Avatar state.
Whatever it is I want you to do, or come with us, or I will kill him. And it's entirely possible he will kill him if he needs Korra more than he wants Tenzin alive.
Yes.
Next episode, though. I don't see why Zaheer would kill Tenzin now.
Yeah, it doesn't make it, like, unless Korra is there and he just kills him. Well, no, there's no reason. Like, there's no reason to kill Tenzin.
It depends on the setup next episode. But the thing about now is
completely ruined the whole point of having Korra.
It does seem like he respects Tenzin as airbending master. He likes airbending culture. You could argue that Tenzin's a world leader, but I don't really think...
But again, that's why I say the only way he would kill Tenzin is if it was imperative that he needed Korra more.
Zahir's primary motivation, over and over, he said it, is he wants Korra. Certainly it doesn't make sense right now how this would help him get Korra, but things change very fast, and we don't know the premise of next episode. So it could be that this goes into a situation next episode, but the thing is about what they make it ambiguous here so that it could be next episode we come in and Tenzin's dead. And you could very easily have that happen.
Oh my god, if we have a Gyatso scene, I'm done. For the record, I'm done.
Well, like, they could just not show the fighting anymore, and he's just gone next episode. Like, they just
He's dead, that could be his perfectly reasonable excuse, and Zahir just doesn't care, because if the only airbending master dies, airbending changes forever.
They could keep it a secret and be like, well, if you want to know if he's dead or alive.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter, if he's like hidden away, it doesn't matter what his status is.
Yeah, if he's hidden, it doesn't
matter.
That would be an interesting dramatic twist on it, though, instead of revealing it. Just be like, well, he could be dead, he could be alive.
Yeah, like, we don't know either, yeah. I don't understand why Zahir would do this, though. I don't think it makes sense with his character motivation.
No.
I will say, though, that killing Tenzin now or in the finale would, I think, make sense with his arc. Mm-hmm. I think he's just had we're kind of gotten the same thing with Tenzin over and over. He's gotten...
killing airbenders at the end of seasons.
He's gotten an increased presence this season, and I think we're wrapping it up with his uses. His main goal in life has been accomplished. There's new airbending nation.
And he's also sort of passed that off to...
And also his daughter is ready to take over everything, seems like, yeah.
But who will give her tattoos?
No one. Unless Aang taught Bumi or Kaya how to do that, which would make sense.
Or they just find another tattoo artist and be like, hey, I want arrows.
Well, it's probably a very traditional ceremony for it.
Yeah.
Once again, blue arrows right here. Right here.
But it's more than just arrows. It follows the chakra lines of the body. It's probably very traditional and very important, and you can't just go to a public city into a tattoo place and be like, "Hey, blue arrows."
I think it would have made sense if Aang taught Kaya specifically this process. I think it would gel with Kaya's personality.
Potato with eyes.
Wow. Okay. So. Yeah, so there's that. But Jinora ready to... This would also make sense with Jinora's increased arc and her becoming the master thing that they established before going into book four.
Either way, I kind of feel like Tenzin, like, his arc definitely will end this season, whether with his death or... But, like, he is kind of like the hinge right now, I think.
If that makes sense. So Aang still has a living airbending son.
True.
Quick yes or no. Tenzin going to be killed off this episode or next episode, this or the finale, last finale episode? Yes or no?
That's not fair.
I can't, because I don't want it to happen.
Predictions.
No. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, I'm with Sam. I don't want to think about it.
That's not acceptable. Yes. Okay, you guys don't
know. I don't think Bryke has the balls to do that. I don't think it's happening.
But I think it could. No.
I think this is what I said. I said 60% not, 40% maybe.
No, I think it's maybe.
I don't think.
Okay.
I will be very impressed if they do. Not that I'll be happy, but I will be impressed.
And then the last scene of the thing is Kai getting caught on the tree. Sigh.
In his flesh and bone puddle foot, apparently.
Yeah. And then the bit, what is good about the scene is the baby bison coming to help him. They set that up in original Airbenders.
Yes, they did.
Kaya being nice to the bison. Yeah.
And baby bison are just adorable, so you get a little bit of a reprieve from just the darkness of the episode.
And then he flies off, leaving us with just giant open
plot threads.
Into the void. So we're going to get to what's going to happen in the finale, but first we need to evaluate the episode. Tough one to evaluate. That's after this. Let's grade it out of 10. 10 is the best episode of TV you've ever seen. 5 is an average one, in general, not just for Avatar Korra. Let's start with Mel. What did you think overall, and what's your grade?
Again, the last act of the episode was far better than the first two acts, which is unfortunate, but... I mean, it was just... There was so much happening in such a short span of time, and a lot of in-world traveling in what was meant to only be a short span of time. There was a lot of jumps in logic that just weren't there in the way characters were acting. But again, that last sequence at the Northern Air Temple was really, really good. So I'm going to say a 7.3.
7.3. Okay.
Yeah.
Britt.
I'm going to give it... I'll give the last half of the episode like an 8 to an 8.5. Like, I honestly just think it was pretty excellent, even if it was just visually. But the first half, I give like a 5.6, maybe a 6.
So are we going to like average them?
So like the average would be like 7-ish. So 7.
Let's okay.
That.
Sam.
Well, it certainly was an episode.
As was every, all of them.
As was every
Sam,
episode.
I don't say this enough to you. You are a treasure.
Oh, thank you. I'll keep that in my little box of things.
You are a national treasure, and nice I mean things. That.
Okay, nice out of 10, Sam.
Catch that in your little nice thing box, like I did last night, and just
save it for
keep
rainy
it there.
Day. Okay, I give it like a 6, because... Well, the episode was very, very average, but then there's some good things that happened, such as the fight thing and grandma and stuff.
So. Grandma. Yeah, I do like practically how they used Grandma Yin, but just not like the concept of.
She just
spend
she
so
is
much
such
time
an old lady.
It.
Like she acts like an old lady would.
I'm gonna take a nap.
She does say that. Okay, Delaney.
I think I'm gonna give it a 6.5. Wait, Sam, did you give it a 6? 6.
I gave
you give
it a
6.
I gave it
yeah.
a
6. Okay, 6.5. Like, I just, the third act was awesome. I did enjoy it, the fighting, but just the whole, I did not enjoy watching it. I was just sitting, Bolin, Mako, go away, just not interested at all.
Yeah.
It was just so it didn't hold my interest. The fights were great.
Oh, bless you.
Oh, really? But the fights were great. I really enjoyed like the weight to the episode in the third act, like just the heaviness and everything. But yeah, it's not. I wasn't like as an episode as a whole. It wasn't that great.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I give it a 7. It could easily be a 6.5. But I think this is a pretty clear ranking for me in context of the overall season, which is slightly better than the Earth Queen episode 3, but worse than the other episodes. Yeah, I think I've stated my problems throughout the podcast. I think many people would disagree with this. I've seen on the AV Club it get an A, on IGN get a 9.2 out of 10. Like, people are really, critically, people are liking it. I think that people give too much weight to episodes where plot happens. Like, I
yes.
just, not weight, because they do have weight, but just
praise.
In terms of goodness, praise, yeah, like.
Yeah.
And some point I didn't mention earlier, Mike really seems to struggle with the finale setup episode. This is the third one in a row that has been less than what we should have had. Turning the Tides in book one of Korra was an underwhelming episode. It was not very good until the last scene. In book two of Korra, Harmonic Convergence, had one good scene with Bumi and the Spirit. Other than that, it was not very good. And this one has a few good scenes, but other than that, not very good. They're all the episode before the finale. They're all these action-packed finale set up, and I don't think Mike knows how to deal with them.
But I would like to say this is much better than the other two that we've had.
I think Harmonic Convergence is probably better than this.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think a lot of it talking about how hard it is to like, well, the difficulty we're seeing with this build-up episode is they have to. There's just all this. They have to throw everything into this one episode so they can have the finale. Just can we space?
We don't
it
need
out
a. We don't need to throw things at the screen.
Yeah.
Especially if we're not going to set them up logically.
And we really didn't need the desert. We really didn't need
that.
Again.
I agree. We didn't.
But Su Yin spent time in the desert. So we had to go back to the desert.
Is this
to remind
you
about
is this
the
in
desert?
Zutara? That's what that tone of voice is.
Well, let's think for a minute. Hold on.
Okay, okay.
I think
but,
if anything, it's Hin Zukang. That's really
anyway. We'll get to your
no.
We'll get to your messages in a minute. Quickly before this, though, Britt has a theory on lineage. Yes.
Oh,
whatever.
This
it's a theory.
You said earlier.
Yes, this is what I said earlier. It's gonna take like 5 seconds. Anyways. I have a theory, a very fancy theory, that Pili is...
I'm so fancy.
Yeah, that Pili is Mako and Bolin's mother. I like the dead silence. Anyway,
explain.
I'm
when,
shocked.
If you see I've been thinking about this for a while now, just because it struck me how much they look alike, Mako and Pili. just visually, but that could just be basic Fire Nation this. But then I looked back at the family photo, and if you age the woman in that picture, whose name we do not know, for, what, 20 years? 15, 13 years. You know, it's logical. We also don't know how, really, how they died other than Mako's story, and he was 8. So, and they have notchy ears, both of them, which is a recessive trait that can only be passed from mother to child.
Oh, here we go.
That's basically, that was my only, like,
that's
I'm actually,
I will,
I'm actually almost convinced.
We learned a
honestly.
Lot about their family in this, like, last couple of episodes that they find that that's their child, and that.
Bert, if you're right, you're a wizard, just for the record.
I hope I'm right.
Yeah, I, wizard, Harry. I don't buy this.
I don't think it's like very.
I think it's a wonderful theory. Like, I enjoy it.
I have some pushback on that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that that's all though?
Oh, just no, there was like there. You to learn about Mako's story, how like they died in the alleyway and he was only 8 years old. Like, she easily could have had the tattoo or hidden the tattoo and like. Thinking that she had tried to kill the firebending criminal. She either was the criminal and was trying to murder them so
yeah,
she could
Mako
join
witnessed
the here.
It.
Yeah, but he was 8. And, like, what does he remember?
Yeah.
I mean, he seems to remember quite a bit.
Well, we don't. He doesn't say.
Or she could think she could have not been dead. She could have thought that everyone else was dead.
This is. I mean, it's interesting, but it's relying on a lot of.
It's
circumstantial,
relying on a lot of speculation.
It's some circumstantial evidence.
Well, to Thank be you. Fair, we don't. We our only direct anyway is Mako, so I'm okay. Like, I'm not. This works, sure. Why not?
We will see.
Yeah,
we will see if they go down this route. I don't know.
It'd be interesting if it like if this like if, well, not even necessarily that like you're right, Britt, but that you're right about there's some sort of odd connection or that they go back to Mako and Bolin's past.
It would be. I will say it would be nice to tie the Red Lotus, 4 Red Lotus members to. The characters we know, so they don't just see them as random popping up in book 3. It'd be nice if they had a connection. Anyway, all right, thank you, Britt. So plot threads we have going into the finale. Here's where we left off this episode, because it's not really clear. Korra and the rest of them are going to go in an airship to the Northern Air Temple, it seems like, but we don't see them leave, and we don't see them arrive. Jenora, Pema, and crew are going to the airship to escape, but we don't see them get there, and we don't see them leave. And Tenzin is being pummeled by...
Why do you say the word pummeled?
I think that's the best adjective to use for this.
You could be dark about it and say he's being beaten.
I would say pummeled is more accurate.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because. And he's... it is, his life is ambiguous. And they're all 4 Red Lotus members with Tenzin. None of them are focusing on Jenora and crew, which would seem to imply that they'll escape. But we didn't see them leave.
No.
Thoughts on what's happening? What's going to happen next?
Everybody's going to be dead.
I don't think so.
Red Wedding is just upon us.
I mean, episode 12 would be the second to last of the season. It would be the Red Wedding territory.
The Red Wedding is here. Yeah. It is loud. It is in charge.
They kill all the airbenders. It just doesn't make sense. I think Korra is just going to show up. Like, I think that's what's logical.
The Red Lotus send their regards.
Regardless of the specifics, I think the biggest thing heading into the finale episodes next week is what does Zaheer want with Korra? It's what we've asked the entire season.
It better be.
And how do we get back to
Boss Sing
Se? Like, do we just go back?
Well, if we're going
back to
Boss
Sing Se.
We have that one shot, which kind of looks like catacombs, but we could be elsewhere.
So we don't know for. I didn't know if it was for sure or not.
I mean, it didn't. Brian did not label it as such. We just assume.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, where are we go? Where will the finale take place?
But if there are catacombs, will be beneath the Metal Clan city because she's wearing, because Sidian is wearing, and several other characters are wearing the crystals. The green crystals are reminiscent.
Yeah, let's build this perfect city, but also just have tunnels below it. That's a good idea.
Maybe that's why she picked there.
Oh, they'd already had tunnels.
That's how they got in.
That's interesting.
No, I mean like the city itself. Like she picked that place to build the city up. Maybe she built it on top of the catacombs for a reason.
Maybe that's how the Red Lotus got in.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, there is a seemingly underground tunnel. Yeah, that makes sense. Because Aiwei's door led into it was like in the basement.
Like I could see, so let's say everybody escapes, then we have Zaheer, and I'm hope they don't kill Tenzin, they just drag him, and they show up in Zhao Fu, and they're like, Kor's about to leave, and Zaheer's like, what's up? And then, I guess, I don't know. There's
well, this, he said he's so not chasing Korra anymore, so that's I do think true. Korra's he's going to be showing up at the Northern Air Temple, because I doubt he's going to go back on that.
I had forgotten about that, yes, Korra's going to show up. I'm just curious, like, what mechanism would make them... Unless there's, I mean, there could be catacombs at, no, that wouldn't really make much sense if it was at the Northern Air Temple, but it could be.
So I think the thing to focus on would be what's the Zaheer want with Korra. And I think I would still say smart money's on the give everyone all four elements theory. Although I don't think it's likely. I think it's
although
more
likely.
Although
I don't likely. Even know how they're going to... They're gonna explain that to us in any way that.
How did they explain anything that happens in the last two?
I know, but think about it. Okay, so the Avatar we know from a Deus Ex Machina. Well, it actually wasn't even really a Deus Ex Machina because you have to talk about something first for it to be a Deus Ex Machina instead of just pulling it out of your butt at the last second. But you know, we knew about the fact that you could, the Avatar could take away bending. And, I mean, unless they play on the idea that the Lion Turtles were also able to grant bending and somehow...
They were able to grant bending.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the only way they could make that believable is if they somehow tie Korra back into the Lion Turtles who were granting bending to everyone.
Yeah, I don't know how it would work, but I think
to be honest,
I
can't put any credence in any theory at this point.
There's no setup. Yeah.
Well, this season, honestly, there's been so many twists and turns that I have no idea.
Well, they're just hiding the information. I don't think this episode is very twisty. Like, I think this.
No, not this episode. Yeah. Not this. I just meant the season as a whole. Like Zaheer's motives. Like the more he talks, the less we know.
Well. We just don't know what he specifically wants to do.
Well, it's not the more he talks, the less we know. It's just the more he talks, the more expansion he gives to what he says earlier.
Yeah, it fears.
So the theory changes. I mean, originally he was talking about chaos. He was talking about the White Lotus and separating Vatu and Rava, which then turned into literal anarchy everywhere.
It's just very not clear what he's going to do
just,
here.
It's a roller coaster.
So... I also, my initial theory this season was that Zaheer is going to try to astral project and Janora would be involved in the finale somehow. I'm not convinced Janora is going to have a big role in the finale at this point. I really think we need to resolve Opal's arc here. I don't think she's just kind of in the background here, and I feel like she needs to do something.
And Sue keeps popping up awkwardly.
Sue pops up. I don't
just in awkward places.
I don't think Sue needs to do anything in the finale to be have like a successful arc for the season. I think she could, but we could also see.
I just feel like. I mean, I don't even, not even like the bad thing or anything. Just something Sue like it. Just she just awkwardly crops up. Like everything just keeps coming back to Zhao Fu.
It does.
It's just odd.
Yeah, I guess and. Yeah, so...
Like, every time we gotta do something, let's go to Zhao Fu. Like, why? Do we have to? Like, it's kind of nearby, but not really.
Not clear,
Like,
yeah,
I have zero theory. Like, I have no... I'm just, like...
We really just have to wait and see for the last two. Let's do some...
It's just an odd position to be in, just in general with Avatar.
Let's do voicemails and messages, of which there's just an incredible amount, which is why I think people liked, this
lots
episode more than we did. Which we'll, I think we'll see. Four voicemails and a ton of messages, so let's
and they're all
get
5 seconds, right? So I
No. Only two of them are 5 seconds.
Bees?
Anyway, no bees. Okay, let's start with Haley, who has a voicemail for us.
Hi, guys. I don't have much to contribute to the discussion, but I just wanted to say that episode was so awesome. Definitely my favorite one of Korra yet, and one of my top ones of Avatar in general. Keep up the great work, guys. Love the podcast.
Yeah, so...
I like Haley.
That was very enthusiastic. Thank you, Haley.
Yes,
Haley spelled H-A-Y-L-E-Y, which is a cool spelling.
Okay.
I mean, there's like 5 spellings of Haley.
Okay.
Are you not aware of this? Anyway.
That's how one of my close friends spells it.
So,
what's the best spelling?
So, like, it... Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of people... We're going to see more people say, wow, this is the best episode of Korra, 10 out of 10. I don't really see it. I kind of understand where you're coming from, because it's so exciting... And
like we haven't had like this is the first time this season on it like we've had a lot of fight scenes but this is like I feel like this fight scenes it just has a lot more impact and it's one of the better ones of the season
and I should
even
say
if you're, even if you're just focusing on the third act as your basis for saying this is the best episode so far, I would still say the stakeout.
I think the stakeout has a better third act.
I think the stakeout is the best episode.
Yeah, I agree.
The fight scene, I could see like why people, like especially because of the fight scene.
So, it should be noted, we shouldn't sound all high and mighty with the not liking this episode as much as everyone else. The critical support seems to be behind what people like Haley are saying. Again, an A on the AV Club, 9.2 out of 10 on IGN. So, other people who are, like, TV critics seem to also
After
think it's
last
great.
Season, it was inevitable that we returned to the negative train.
I think what people here are really, really liking is just the pace of it. Because we've had so many... Even the stakeout was really slow in the beginning until it quickly picked up. I think because this had really fast pacing throughout...
There was just a lot in this episode.
Anyway,
like,
okay.
That's what people are responding to is the pacing.
Next, we have a voicemail from Felicity, who sent us a lot of voicemails last season. I would say listen carefully because this is extremely complicated and thought-provoking.
Jeez.
Okay.
The Here's Nihilism kind of feels like an extreme version of Guru Patik's everything is connected and everyone is part of the same whole concept we saw in The Guru. This makes me think more and more that Zaheer was an air acolyte, which is why he knows so much more about air nomad history than everyone else. Except that got me thinking that his nihilism and need to destroy political leaders will lead him to setting up a new kind of power with the rest of the Red Lotus, because technically...
Oh, it cut off.
That's sad.
I don't know. I just downloaded it. I don't remember if it cut off when I listened to it the first time. Anyway, I don't know if Zaheer's a nihilist, right? Like, let's define that. Define nihilism.
I've actually had thought about it before, and I almost brought it up in the Marxist discussion.
Nihilism, the rejection of all religious and moral principles, often in the belief that life is meaningless. I don't know if that describes it here.
Well, to be fair, we've been applying a lot of things to him.
I think it's just as fair to say.
I think it's far too spiritual
Marxist.
To say that, though.
Yeah, I don't. Well,
because to him, he's not suggested anything where he thinks sort of existentially about any of this. He's just he doesn't like society.
But
well,
I could say enter the void. The whole void thing could be that. I could see why that would spark that thought.
But he seems way too spiritual to
I don't, so
reject
I think,
all
I think
forms
it's
of...
Spiritual in the Avatar universe isn't necessarily religious in our universe.
Yes.
Right?
And it's not, which is why I don't think you can easily compare, you know, stuff like that here. So,
I do think
which
it's...
is why I would say the best comparison would be spirituality.
He seems to be amoral, though. I would say that.
Yes,
he just doesn't really care.
Thing, like, amoral. Like, he just...
I think it's the big thing with nihilism is the belief that life is meaningless. I don't know if we've seen enough from him.
Yeah, we
about
haven't.
That. It's tough. She said connecting to Guru Patik.
I just watched that episode, and yes.
I think we could certainly see like he says there's no nations and that people should just be together, right? He said that. So I think that's a good connection. Seems maybe maybe we'll learn that Guru Patik was an understudy of Guru Lahima.
There's a very, very good chance.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Tom has a voicemail for us. Let's listen to Tom.
Tenzin, why?
That's Tom's
wow,
voicemail.
Tom. Is
that the 5 second
very
one?
Insightful.
Yes, there's another 5 second one. But
yes,
I agree with Tom.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I had just watched the episode. Like, I can relate to, you know, that response because I get on Skype and I just start cursing. I'm like, what is this? What did I just watch?
Yes, okay. Next we have 17-year-old fan. I did not leave a name. That was their name. Okay. Another 5 second one. Okay. The people want Bolin to learn lava bending.
Okay. We did not hear that, but thank you for...
Well, he said give Bolin lava bending. He was kind of low.
Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, okay.
I think we could see that in the finale.
Since apparently metal bending is not...
Yeah, that's not...
Not happening.
Unless
we're just going to keep beating that horse.
Okay.
On
to emails/Tumblr asks. The first few we got before the episode aired, so I'm going to try to skim through them. Carrie sent us a really nice email saying, been a fan of the podcast since Avatar. Thank you very much. Or a huge fan of Avatar and enjoyed Korra. Just listened to the podcast and for Long Live the Queen. I really love the theory that all the antagonists of previous Korra seasons, that the potential future antagonists are members of the Red Lotus. I think this would be exactly what Korra needs in order to be tied together in a truly cohesive series. I believe that its lack of cohesion is one of its serious faults. If this theory does unfold, a really interesting dimension would be the distrust and conflict that would evolve in a sort of Red Scare fashion. Perhaps as it is revealed that more characters have been affiliated with the Red Lotus, we could see fear of another characters around them are also Red Lotus members, especially with Korra, who is distrusting nature is and often concerned with his who is on her side. I believe this is especially plausible with the highly political nature of the show. A really interesting possibility with this is possible divide between Mako and Bolin. It seems improbable at first, but I do agree that with you that we're witnessing a growing divide between them. Bolin's association with Sue, a possible Red Lotus member via Opal, and Bolin's impressionable nature could put him in an affiliation with the Red Lotus, while Mako's history with the government as a police officer would obviously oppose him to this views. This would cause some serious conflict between them, which would seem to fill the pattern of fraternal conflict we've seen so far in the show. Tarlac Noataku and Alaka Tanrak. I don't know if you ever discuss. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Now Hydra.
So this is this is the Hydra theory, right?
Yeah.
If you're unfamiliar with the Marvel universe,
go see Captain America 2.
America 2. Hydra is within.
Or watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is within S.H.I.E.L.D. And we just it's like who's part of Hydra now that this secret organization. I think that's a really good and intelligent email from Carrie. I agree it would tie the show together really well, random people being Red Lotus. It kind of seems like we're retconning things, but I'm fine with that.
I honestly wouldn't mind to see like something like Amon or just because I understand that episode that season was made on its own, but the fact that now these seasons are tied together except for that one.
Yeah.
It's kind of bugging me. So I wouldn't mind if they went back and retconned that. And
like, I'd be okay with just a flashback kind of deal. And you just see them. They're just standing there all around the same table. Like, I'd be okay with that. That'd work for me. Like, they don't even have to really say it.
Just a one-off line where they're like,
yeah.
Oh, Amon was in the Red Lotus too.
Yeah, so Amon is the big one. Is Amon Red Lotus? That would certainly tie book one to the rest of the series. We've already seen Unalaq tied.
Because it's not exactly they're not exactly
I want
a huge disparity between the views.
Yeah, I think it could easily tie. I don't want Amon. I don't honestly want one line. I want more of an explanation.
And it would really make a lot of sense that they did that because honestly, throughout each season's dealt with the same idea basically with just different twists along the way.
The talk of Bolin and Mako separating is just really articulated really well in that email. Bolin via Opal maybe going to the Red Lotus. Mako would seemingly be the last person to go towards the Red Lotus because of him being a cop, so I think that could be really interesting. Okay, next, Blueberry Gingerhead on Tumblr says praise for the podcast, thank you. I like to skip over the first parts. I do have a question for the next podcast. I think the ultimate ultimatum is Korra battling with herself over whether she give up her life for this battle between the Red Lotus. Do you think she would if it came down to that, or do you think she would find a way to cheat death like Aang found with Ozai?
This is what's interesting when you've got a situation where you're forcing the Avatar into something like this, because on the it's a very complicated, because okay, so normal person, say, you know, you were somewhere and someone had one of your family members and threatened to kill them unless you did this, your natural reaction would probably be to do it,
yes.
You know, to save their lives. You probably dying in the process. The Avatar has an added burden here where, well, is it if she were to die to say, like, okay, so say she gives herself up to the Red Lotus to protect Tenzin, that's the selfish act. Because, I mean, she's the Avatar, and like Zuko said, you know, it's she's responsible for not, you know,
yeah.
And it's difficult
everything
because
you're adding
quantities to, like, you know, you're quantitating life and putting values on different things. But the thing is, she can't, you know, it's difficult to rationalize her giving as the Avatar giving herself up for one person when it's her job to be there to protect.
It doesn't really make sense. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, never mind.
But I think that Korra is entirely capable of making that decision and saying, yeah, I'm going to protect Tenzin, I'm going to protect whoever,
yes,
by giving myself up, because it's very much in her nature to do something like that.
Should she
be doing it is the real question.
I'm so sick of the protagonists giving themselves up for a threat,
yes,
of the entire Voldemort.
Well,
that's never
going to go away. But my point here, Dylan, is not if or...
Yeah,
how
so
do it. Is it a good idea?
Yes,
I
responding.
Say, even though we did, sorry.
Responding to the ask, I don't see Korra doing something like Aang with Ozai with the cheating death thing. I feel like that's like a high spiritual thing. I don't know if Korra is capable of that right now.
Well, I feel like that was just a deep part of Aang's character, and that's we haven't really had an experience with that with Korra.
Well, Aang didn't know he was going to die when that happened.
It's true.
Like it's, he wasn't giving... it's slightly different, but I understand the comparison.
Yeah, like I mean, he was giving something up, but mm-hmm. It wasn't his intention to get electrocuted.
Yeah, anyway, continuing on. Sorry if we're going fast through subjects, we have a lot more to get to. Mare, our friend Mare from Dong Wufeng, says, and former podcast host, I really liked Mako in this episode. He was great in all of his scenes. The stuff on the airship was great. The stuff with Naga and his grandma was great. And the way he acted with Korra was great. Normally, Mako would be super brash as far as Korra's safety, but he was perfectly cool with letting Asami watch over Korra going to the spirit world. He didn't act the least bit concerned. He knew Asami and Korra could handle themselves. I think he was really starting to chill out. I think that's actually a good point. Like,
yeah.
Book one, it Mako is. Would not have let Asami...
I almost mentioned it when we were talking about Asami, like, taking her claim, because I would have expected Mako to be at least put up a fight.
Yeah, I think that is character growth for Mako, even if it's implied.
Yeah, and especially, well, I think a lot of, like, his implied character now is just he's not as visible.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mom Racer, I think it was on the DF forums as well, says, Tenzin said he will continue fighting so long as Hei has breath inside him. Is here going to take away his breath?
There's definitely a song that could go here.
I think there are numerous songs that could go here.
He's going to take him out on a nice date.
Well, like, so you almost expect Zaheer to do that right after he says it, but instead they just pummel him into the wall.
Well,
so.
Again, because he doesn't want... it's not his intention to kill Tenzin.
I don't think so either. So I don't think
or any airbender.
It could happen next episode, but we'll see. RJ Burnt Toast says, when during book four do you think we'll see the Fire Lord, or do you think we'll see her at all?
Honora is elusive.
Yes.
Yeah. And she is a shadow upon the world.
I wouldn't expect her to see her in the finale, although it's possible, but I think in book four we'll see her.
Yeah, I do think. But
I don't know when.
Definitely not this season, though.
She also says, also about Tenzin, my inner optimist is maintaining that he isn't dead and the Red Lotus is just holding him hostage to make sure Korra will turn himself over to Zaheer. Tenzin still may die in the end, though, but I hope he doesn't. So I don't think Tenzin's dead right now. He could be, but I just don't know how that
would make
sense.
I feel like, especially after, like, the scene with the Earth Queen and how they displayed, like, it was pretty, yeah, she's dead, obviously. But the way they did it with Tenzin, yeah, I think the way they presented it, because they definitely could have presented it in a way they did with the Earth Queen, where it was obvious that Tenzin's not dead. Like, they did it that way, intentionally.
At this point, they don't need to prove anything about Zaheer meaning what he says, because we already watched him murder the Earth Queen, so there's no point. In terms of dying at this particular juncture.
I mean, it would further his cause of taking out world leaders. I don't know.
Yeah, but at this point, Tenzin's not a world leader.
Yeah, I don't really... I mean, you could kind of see him as a world leader. I don't really think so. What's the problem, on Tumblr says, on my second viewing, I noticed it's all good if Bumi and Kaya mention death when they're about to get blown to bits by Pali. But for Zaheer's big speech, he has to say darkness, and absolutely no one can mention death any kind relating to the Earth Queen ever, even in this episode. It's not saying it going to magically make it so she didn't really get killed on screen or something. The censor is becoming more arbitrary by the second.
I think the grandmother did say rest in peace, so I feel like that was surprised by that.
I think we're kind of implying that, like... Mike and Tim last episode wanted to say death, but they couldn't. I don't know if that's true. I think they may have just wanted to write it like this. It should be noted on Gravity Falls this week, in just a very casual, like, funny scene, they just said death, like, twice.
Well, I've rewatched the first two seasons of Avatar, but I can't think of anything, but that doesn't mean it isn't there, that some kind of casual mention in Avatar?
I'm not sure.
Because I mean, I feel
well, they
like,
say
I feel
did
like,
he did he die? It's really unclear at the very least.
Well, I feel like the big thing, like the reason this particular I forgot the name already person is taking issue, and in general people are taking issues because they really could have died, and for all they could be dead, we don't know. It was very unclear. But I think because in that moment, like they really could die, as opposed to just mentioning it offhandedly.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we're putting words in Mike and Tim's mouth by saying that the censors are here. I don't think we know that.
Like especially like the Earth Queen scene. I don't see why that would be a thing, and they just chose not to. They just felt the need that darkness sounded better.
It doesn't really make sense, but I think they probably
more poetic.
Yeah, I think they probably are trying for the poeticness with darkness. What's the problem? Also says. Justice for Katara 2K14. The narrative has forgotten she exists again. Married to Aang, knew him longer than Zuko. Has Airbender children in the temple that is about to be attacked. Help raise your waterbending teacher. Ringing any bells, writers? I wouldn't have even had too much of a problem with Korra seeking Zuko's counsel if it wasn't for that one line. So I think Justice for Katara 2K14 was started by Escalations. I don't know if it's a thing, but that's like reference.
I think
to
it
the,
should be a thing.
That's a reference to the Jinora's tattoos 2K14 or whatever.
I am annoyed that if you're going to bring a character like that back and then not do anything with her and have her sit down at the bottom of the world.
And then you have Zuko give really unhelpful advice.
Justice for Katara because
2K14.
It's ridiculous. Yes, 2K14. It's not next year, this year.
Especially because like Katara, yes, The Last Airbender was about Aang, but Katara was the driving force of the original series. And she's just
you could even argue Katara started out the series as the main character.
Yes, definitely.
But here, like, you can't just have Katara alive and sitting at the bottom of the world.
And then have this
content to do that while all this stuff is going on. And then you bring back Zuko who doesn't do anything.
That line was a little frustrating.
I was very annoyed.
Andrew says, what do you guys think of the dialogue? Because I didn't really like it very much. Thanks. Oh, and this episode is really good. Yeah. Dialogue, not good.
No.
RTR emailed us saying, the theory that Suyin and Opal are with the Red Lotus is still alive due to these two reasons. One, after the group splits off, when Tenzin starts to fight Zaheer, we never see Opal in any of the scenes after that. Two, even more troublesome, Suyin took almost a whole day to try to contact the Air Temple, and Bolin gets it first try. So I think number two was addressed in the episode, which is she says she has been trying to contact them all day, but there's just no answer.
Yeah.
Mm. Number
they are at a temple, and especially just the fighting scenes, and like when the Red Lotus appear, everyone's so spread out. So that seems realistic to me.
And number one, I think Opal with Jinora's group at the end.
I didn't notice her. Yeah. Granted, I only watched it once.
Ooh,
I didn't notice her.
She broke off and is now plotting against them. I don't think
it was just like, JK, she wasn't going to hurt me.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Chilling.
I mean, we do have Minghua taking a giant ice tentacle to her head, so you would think that Minghua does not know Opal.
Yeah, she just like snatched her.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all. Let me check one more time Tumblr to make sure that's all the voicemails and asks. Thanks, guys, for sending them in. I could do the same thing for the finale next week. I'll let you know on my Tumblr or what time you have to get them in by Dylan FTSW. I think that's going to be it for this. Any last comments on anything we've talked about?
No.
I'm pretty satisfied.
Mel might, but she is on mute, so. too bad, Mel. Sorry, Mel. I've been your main host. Dylan Coase have been Mel. Oh, yeah, and Britt left a little bit ago. She had to
do
something.
Just falling apart.
I know. Sad. Co-hosts have been Delaney, Sam, Britt, Mel. Tech directors, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Music creators, Yoshida, Brothers, Jeremy, Zuckerman, Luke, Tripp, Logan, Banner by Kevin, Dom, Kings on my J. Contributors, Garrett, Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi, Colin. Nicknames, whatever. Sierra, Miss, Nick and I, Rudy, Tweety, Cohen. Check out dombufang.net/podcast is the podcast page there. You can see who we are with the podcast bios. Check out awesome art of us from Teresa. You can donate if you want to do so by clicking on the donate button at the top, and you get a nickname. Email us, dylan@dongwufeng.net. Tumblr is dongwufeng, and Twitter, dongwufeng. You should really follow dongwufeng Tumblr. Comment on this podcast on the DF forums, dongwufeng.net/forums. I would really like feedback. Thank you for reviewing the podcast, whoever did so on iTunes.
Thanks,
we really appreciate that. I'm going to check that in a minute, who that was. A lot of our feedback on iTunes. Our feedback on iTunes is either super negative or super positive. So
there is
funny.
No middle.
Ooh, maybe we got another one too. There's 189 ratings right now.
Let's check.
No, that's a super. That's no two negative ones. Come on.
Oh no.
Compelling in a negative way, and 2-hour review of a 21-minute show. I hate stuff like that. Come on, like we're allowed to do that.
Like calm down.
Thanks, guys.
But anyway, thanks to the priest they called him and Moo Moo Milk Rocket for positive reviews on iTunes.
Moo Moo Milk Rocket?
Yeah, that's a pretty cool name.
I like your name.
Yeah, this negative review is interesting. It's saying we're too entrenched in the fandom. I think that's very possible.
Well, we have a podcast about a show.
However, we tend to disagree with the fandom. So I don't
also, they also say there's far better Avatar podcasts out there. I don't really think there's other active ones at the moment. There's very few, anyway. Yeah. Oh, Mel's got to go. Bye, Mel. Yeah, positive review us on iTunes. That'd be nice because we get a lot of negative
yes,
ones
please.
Like that, and it's always been like that.
People hate us.
I don't really know why. Usually,
I think
podcasts
it's just iTunes
don't
in
get
general.
Negative iTunes in general, but also I don't know. It is maybe a valid criticism that we use fandom terms too often that casual fans wouldn't understand.
We sound like whiny teens.
Apparently,
I'm 20 years old.
I'm an adult. Anyway, yeah. Follow these Tumblr accounts. If you have any questions for me, any at all, you can ask me at my ask box at dylanftsw.tumblr.com. Also, Ali and Mel and Sam have ask blogs. If you go to the podcast page...
And I'll answer asks on my blog.
On Delaney's blog. If you go to the Tumblr post I made for this podcast, I link to people's personal blogs. I don't think I link to the ask blogs, though. I might add that to the podcast descriptions. So yes, send us voicemail and feedback for next week's after the finale. Finale podcast next week. I get excited.
We are ending on Avatar Asami.
Yes,
no
we are.
Discussion.
I agree. I don't know what the plan is for next week. I might try to do video. I'll let you guys know on like Tumblr and stuff. I don't know though. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Any last comments?
No.
I didn't really read them, but thanks for the positive stuff, guys. You're cool.
You're cool, guys. Yes.
You're
anyway.
Cool, yeah.
Thanks. Avatar Asami, correct?
Yes.
Okay, one.
No discussion.
One, two, three, Avatar Asami.
Avatar Asami.